In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Like a lot of people who were cynical teenagers in the 1990s, I considered Celine Dion cheesy at best, and as a Canadian, kind of embarrassing. Don't hold it against me, that was kind of the style at the time. Celine was over-emotional. She was way too heartfelt and earnest and cringy, and you remember. And then I got older, and Celine kind of faded into the background. At least, I certainly never thought that I would be publicly apologizing and admitting my wrongness 20 years later on a podcast. But here we are, and here is Celine. And by here, I mean everywhere. She is rocking fashion weeks. She's changing the definition of a Las Vegas residency. She is planning her first worldwide tour, and forever, she has a new album. And oh my, does that single kind of rock? 'Cause I got my own imperfections. I got my own. So wait, is Celine Dion finally cool? Or have we all finally become cool enough to get where she was coming from this whole time? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Susanna Scholer is a writer at many publications, including The Walrus, where she unpacked today's Celine Dion. Hey, Susanna.
Hi.
Why don't we start in Vegas, like you did? And for those of us who have not been there, tell me what it's like to watch Celine Dion perform in Las Vegas.
Well, first of all, it was my first time in Vegas. So it was a bit overwhelming. And I was, at the time, I was living on a small island in BC where there are no streetlights. So heading to Las Vegas was a little bit of a physical and emotional culture shock. And Celine was incredible. I have to say, it was really above and beyond. I had spent a few days there by the time I saw her. And it really sort of felt like the culmination of my Vegas experience. She is just a flawless professional and really just like a force of nature. There's not a note amiss in her entire performance. It's really, really incredible to see.
What about sort of the theater itself and the showmanship of it all? Is it done up in pure Vegas style? I have never been to a concert in Vegas, for the record.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the pure Vegas style is necessarily because I haven't been to any other shows, but hers really. So, I mean, it's enormous, first of all. It's just like a huge amphitheater. It's very, but somehow weirdly intimate. Like you can really see her from all angles and she feels very close, even though you're quite, I mean, I was quite physically far away. I guess lots of other people pay more money to be a lot closer to her. And people are just like really there to have a good time. It's a very, although I would actually say it was a lot calmer than the rest of Vegas. Like there's such focus and such attention on this one phenomenon rather than having sort of distractions everywhere and like flashing things. It's just really like, you know, you and your 4,000 closest friends and Celine Dion.
And she had been there almost constantly for about 16 years, right? When it ended in June.
Yeah, she first started there in 2003 and was there from 2003 to 2007 and then again from 2011 until just this June.
When she first started in Vegas as a resident, what was a residency in Vegas seen as for a performer?
When Celine first started in Vegas as a resident, it was really seen as a place where you sort of went for your career to quietly die. It was not a place people went to promote new work, to sort of be on the up. And so it was really quite radical that she went at the moment of really like the peak of her fame. It was just after Titanic. It was when the entire world really for the first time knew who Celine Dion was. And it was really considered like a very strange and unexpected career move. And it has just absolutely radically transformed the economics of what a Vegas residency is and what it means. And also really like the cultural valence of what it means to do a residency there is now something people do when their careers are really thriving, not when their sort of stardom is in decline.
Why did she decide to go to Vegas then at the peak of her fame?
Yeah, so she does discuss this a little bit in her autobiography. And I would say that the main reason was her husband, René Angelil, who was also her manager. He was a really big Vegas guy. And he was a gambler. And he had relationships with all of the casino owners, with the hotel owners. He was just like really a part of that world. And it was really sort of his vision. And it was kind of a huge gamble. And it certainly did ultimately pay off. But that was really, yeah, mostly his brainchild, I think. And I mean, certainly a gamble for her career and a really big forward decision in that way. But also, I think just really a personal decision. Like, he wanted to be in Vegas.
What about the way her career has been transformed over the time she's been in Vegas? Because I remember, I am the right age to remember the Titanic era Celine mm-hmm. Dion. And she was many things and she was huge, but she was also just not cool in particular.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a really tough question to answer because there's, I think, a lot of factors. Because something that a lot of Celine fans will say when you mention like, oh, like she's suddenly cool again, is they get very defensive about
it. She's always cool.
Exactly. They're like, she's always been here. She's always been a queen. But, and that's sort of her fans call her Queen Celine. That's the reference. Right. But I would say that to my mind, this has a lot to do with our culture's relationship to irony and the way that that relationship has been renegotiated a lot. And I feel like, I mean, this is just completely my assessment, but I feel like in the last few years, we've really moved away from being interested in art and culture that projects any kind of like reserve or detachment or disinterest or like ironic distancing. Like it in the way that, I mean, I'm sort of originally a product of the 90s, and I feel like in the 90s, there's a sort of like, irony was really like the dominant mode.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've really moved into a place where we've come to really value just like raw, open-hearted sincerity. And Celine Dion has always been there delivering that. And it was sort of embarrassing, I think, to a lot of us, like to like the cultural sensibility for a long time. And I don't know if I'm right about this, but I kind of feel like in the wake of the 2016 election of Donald Trump, that really changed the way our culture views expressions of sincerity and expressions of emotion. And there's been this move towards like tenderness and like big-heartedness and people sort of expressing their love and their pain in really frank ways. And Celine Dion has just always done that. And then the other thing I think that she really captures, in addition to that kind of like schmaltzy, big-hearted quality, is that we've also become very comfortable mediating our big and strong emotions through very superficial media. And like sort of the like Instagram post about all the feelings is kind of the prototype. Right. And Celine Dion is an incredibly superficial person who's nonetheless like completely imbued with huge and unwieldy and sincere emotions. So I feel like she's sort of become this avatar for what our cultural taste has like grown into.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
So give me an example beyond the songs themselves that kind of illustrate the persona that she wears now and how it resonates with us.
Well, definitely her fashion is a great place to turn. I mean, she's all of a sudden really become a fashion icon, and she's always been very, very interested in fashion, and she talks about it again a lot in her autobiography. And she's always really liked kind of like big things and too much and excess. And it often took a form that I think in the past we would have described as incredibly tacky. And now fashion has sort of moved in this direction where like expressions of over the topness and sort of like ridiculousness and self-reference have really moved back into fashion, back into And so Celine Dion is like all of a sudden just even this year, you know, was like queen of Paris Couture Week, you know, watching her. She was, you know, walking around Paris using like dogs as props and just like wearing like huge and ridiculous and over the top things and like really mixing like high and low. And everyone just loved it. It just sort of felt like she was this 2019 figure, but she's just like always been there doing that. It just looked totally different to us.
Tell me about what it's like to try to inhabit that kind of persona, because you spoke to a number of people who are Celines, I guess.
Yeah, so I approached this piece, I mean, typically when you're writing a celebrity profile, the ideal thing obviously is to spend time with that person and to you know, sort of follow the model where you spend 3 days with them and the publicist sends you out to go mini golfing or whatever. And obviously in the case of somebody like Celine Dion, that is just not really an option. So I was really just trying to find a way to see her in a different way and to think about like how I could get close to her without being with her. And actually it was also partly I should give credit where it's due to Danny Viola, my editor at The Walrus. When we were just kind of knocking ideas around, he brought up impersonators. And I was like, what about a piece that's just all about the impersonators?
But how do you impersonate Celine Dion?
Yeah, yeah. Well, very different ways. I mean, the thing that I learned about impersonation is that, I mean, it kind of takes place on a spectrum and that people are doing different things with it. Like there are, like, well, the main distinction is essentially whether people are like lookalikes and their goal is to just present visually as Celine Dion. And then maybe like, so for example, like in doing drag, you're lip syncing, like it's all about sort of inhabiting somebody's character. And then there are vocal impersonators who will perform as Celine, like singing her songs. So I spent time with both. And the way that they do it, I mean, they all sort of have different approaches to it. But the thing that was, I mean, I don't know if I want to say it was surprising to me, but it was more than I could have hoped, was just the degree to which it's almost sort of like a spiritual transformation that these people undergo, that they really are trying to sort of inhabit and channel like her and some quality of like her essence and her character and her being. And they just like really adore her far above and beyond what I really could have expected. And for the most part, I would say there were also some people who I didn't necessarily include in the story, but who I talked to or researched or like looked around. And there is a mode of becoming an impersonator where it's more like you happen to have an incredible vocal expression. You happen to basically be an incredible vocalist and you apply that talent to mimicking Celine Dion. The people who I ended up choosing for the story and ended up talking to were more people who were really like immersed in becoming her. And it was really, really interesting. It was really interesting to see them and to look at their performances and to talk to them about what they do. It was quite fascinating.
How do those people, because they're impersonating Celine, but they're also living their regular lives.
Yeah.
How do you merge those two, and how do you be Celine in public with all of the, because of all the people to impersonate, it's a very odd one for Vegas especially.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in some, it's different for different people, but in a lot of cases, this is just sort of, you know, they're freelancers and they live a life the way that many freelancers do, where this is a gig, they're self-employed, they are negotiating their own contracts with people and sort of figuring and trying to figure out what their service is worth and what they can ask for and, you know, how much to invest in their costumes and in their makeup. And it's really just like anybody running a small business. It's just like a very odd and very particular and very unique service that they're offering. And yeah, they have very regular lives. They're just people, you know?
Has Celine ever met any of them?
So mostly no. And actually a big part of my piece was really talking to people about their relationship to her, specifically in light of the fact that they hadn't met her. There's like a very big longing on many of their parts to be close to her and to meet her. But there's also quite a lot of anxiety about the fact that, you know, you have dedicated your art and your craft and your livelihood to imitating a person. You don't know if they really are going to like that you're their copycat. So while I was writing the story, one of the impersonators I had been speaking to, Stephen Wayne, who is a drag performer, he had been in Vegas at the time for 20 years. And so slightly longer than Celine herself. And they'd never met. And he was really devastated by it. And then while I was writing the story, he got hired by Celine's people to perform in a sort of promotional video for her new world tour, where he plays a Celine Dion impersonator. So he plays himself playing Celine. Right. And so they met like while I was writing the piece after I had met him. And he texted me and like sent me a photo of the two of them on the set. And he just talked about how wonderful she was and how gracious. And there's actually, you can find some videos on YouTube of like from like the making of video from this promo that they did. And, you know, there's them, you know, in the desert and he's like wearing his sparkly Celine dress and she's like wearing this ludicrous outfit and dancing right. around and talking to him about how much she appreciates him. And yeah, so that was really lovely that that connection got to happen, and it was very lucky for me in writing the story.
Do we appreciate Celine Dion in Canada as much as they do in Vegas, or as much as we should, I guess? Because it's always for a lot of us come back down to the, are we appropriately proud of our national icons?
Yeah, I think that lately there's been a real, in the, just her increase in popularity in general, I feel like Canadians are kind of seizing a little bit on that and being like, yeah, no, she's one of ours. But
we haven't really done that for her entire career. Like, she was made fun of on South Park and Canadians were apologizing right. for her. And
yeah, but I mean, I feel like recently there's been a turn, like all of a sudden, like just with this sudden sort of like the Celine sauce, as they're calling it. I do feel like Canada, I find, is always very quick to claim people when they're doing well elsewhere. and so I feel like only in very recent times has that kind of happened. And I do think that Canada maybe has like the opportunity to appreciate Celine Dion in a way that Americans like never really fully can. And for more on that, I would recommend people read Carl Wilson's book. It's called Let's Talk About Love. And it's sort of an examination of kind of the hermeneutics of taste as evidenced by Celine Dion. And he has a really wonderful chapter about her relationship specifically to like Quebecois music and to Quebecois history that I think is really stunning. So if people want further reading, I recommend that.
Well, that was kind of the last little bit I wanted to talk to you about, is because she's been in Vegas for most of the last 16 years. How connected is she to Quebecois culture, and has she performed there? Is she going back?
Oh yeah, I don't know if I'm going to quote this right, but in her autobiography, at one point she says that, this is kind of a roundabout answer, but she performs like really rigorous vocal rest and like will not speak for days at a time to save her vocal cords. And at one point in her autobiography, she says that silence is a country I will always go back to, just as I'll always go back to Quebec. And I just love that. She considers herself very, very deeply rooted in Quebec. And I know she certainly very much considers herself Quebecois. Also, I mean, I think anybody who, you know, sees her, hears her speak, there's something sort of ineffably Quebecois about her, I think.
Yeah.
But I hope that doesn't offend anyone.
I think she's a Quebecois icon. I mean, come
on. Yeah.
Lastly, where does she go from here? So she's not made any plans to go back to Vegas yet. You mentioned a world tour. Do we get new Celine music? Is she capitalizing, I guess, on the Celenaissance?
Oh, she sure is. Yeah. She's launching her 12th studio album in English, I believe, also called Courage, starting world tour that I don't think has any plan to end yet. Like, they just kind of keep adding dates. And yeah, and also, I mean, they've only released one track from the album so far, I believe. I think it comes out in November. But it's sort of like an EDM dance, like upbeat, dancey pop EDM hit. So I think she's also really exploring different sounds. And, you know, it's a whole new Celine.
Amazing. Thanks, Susanna.
All right. Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure.
Susanna Scholer from The Walrus. That was The Big Story. For more from us, including zero other episodes about Celine Dion so far, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can also share your Celine thoughts and tell me how wrong I was on our Twitter account at TheBigStoryFPN. And of course, this podcast and all our brother and sister podcasts here at the Frequency Podcast Network are available wherever you get them, in your favorite app, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, pick one. Claire Broussard is the lead producer of The Big Story. Ryan Clark and Stephanie Phillips are our associate producers, and Annalisa Nielsen is our digital editor. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Listen to some Celine. We'll talk Monday.